I was asked by a brother to just mention something that he was asking me about. He's asked me if you can get the Quran on, you know, like on the web, or you can do like word searches. And what I can tell you is that Online Bible actually has it on in its program. They have the 1935 translation of Yusuf Ali, which is the most popular English translation that Muslims would accept. And it is a tremendous help to me. If you're working amongst Muslims, you can, you know, put a keyword and find the verse you're looking for real quickly. So I'm not by any means, I've read the Quran through in English and French. And it's important if you work with Muslims to be able to say that you've read it through. But I don't know my way around in it like I do the Bible, and I never will. I never want to. Another brother had asked me, do you think we should read the Quran? Should we buy a copy of the Quran and read it? You know, is it really worth taking the time? Well, I would say, if you're going to work amongst Muslims, absolutely. But if you're not, I would say, you know, I wouldn't bother. wouldn't bother, but you're welcome to. If you have a desire to know the content, you'll find the boring rather reading rather boring and very monotonous. But you'll get some sad entertainment out of it too, I'm sure. For instance, if you were to read chapter 12, which is called Joseph, it's the story of Joseph, you could play a little game and read it and say, let's see, how many details can I find that are different in the Quranic version of Joseph versus the Bible version of Joseph? I think you'll find at least 20. So, it's interesting. I have one question here, and then we'll accept them from the floor if there are any. If the Quran was inspired by Satan, why would it contain so many truths about Christ? Good question. The only thing I would say to that is that Satan is imperfect, as we know so well, and maybe he didn't do his job too well. And yet we know, too, that Satan will mix the truth with falsehood. That's his style. You know, counterfeit bills, we've all heard that illustration. Never, you don't have a counterfeit bill, American dollar that's, you know, yellow and has a picture of Mickey Mouse on it. It never passed. So you make it look pretty close to the original. And who can deny the wonders of the person of Jesus? So he gets some credit in the Quran. You build him up enough, and then you pull out the essentials, the basics of the gospel. And that's what the Quran does. Meanwhile, though, it's something that God can use to create an interest in Muslims. And I feel like Satan just didn't do his job quite so well. Just like he failed when he inspired people to say, crucify him. He thought he was doing something to further his work. But as it turned out, he was fulfilling the very work that God intended for our salvation. All right, are there some questions? If not, you'll just get to go home early, which I know won't bother you. I appreciate your patience, and we've plowed through a lot of material. Yes?
Why did the Muslims say it was Ishmael who was going to be sacrificed?
Good question. It's insinuated. It's in the text. If you read the story there in chapter 7, the whole context, it was talking about Ishmael. And then it says, take your son, you know, God saying to Abraham, take his son. And so the flow of the context makes it quite clear that it's Ishmael, according to the Quran. So this is where they get it from. Though it doesn't actually specifically say it was Ishmael. But that's where they get it from. Just the Quran and the context there. Of course, they're ignoring what the Bible says. They're saying it's been changed. Can't trust it. Yes, I'm done.
Do you think that the average Muslim considers Americans and Christians as synonymous?
The question is, I'll repeat it here, do we think that Christians and Muslims see?
No, Muslims consider Americans and Christians
as synonymous, yeah. Do Muslims consider Americans and Christians as synonymous? Yes, most do. Most don't recognize the distinction between Americans and Christians, and so the immorality and the evil that is being practiced and exported from our country is seen to be coming from Christians. I've received many emails from Muslims that say that very thing. You know, say, you know, who are you to talk? I mean, look at, if Christianity is, you know, half-naked women or this or that, you know, then we don't want it. And I've written back to like this particular guy who said that. I told him about some of our Christian women and the godly women they are. I quoted to him from Titus chapter 2, and you know, it talks about what a godly woman's like, and you can only trust that if they're seeking, they'll listen and realize there is a distinction there. Another question? Okay, we'll take here and then there. John?
Well, I've been doing some reading recently on Islam, and one of the things I haven't been able to figure out is, like, they talk about, they believe in the Torah, they believe in the prophets, and then they say they believe in the gospel of Jesus.
Yes.
But what does that really mean? Does that equate to the four gospels of the New Testament? Or what does it exactly mean?
Yeah, that's a good question concerning the Gospels, because the Quran speaks of the Gospel of Jesus, just like it spoke of the Torah of Moses and the Psalms of David. And by the way, the Psalms of David wasn't totally written by David, right? I mean, the Psalms was written by many writers. David wrote about half of them. So that's already a misnomer. When you come to the Gospel, saying it's the Gospel of Jesus, their thought is that Jesus wrote the Gospel. That is their thought. And so when they see in the New Testament Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, they'll despise it and say, what's this Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John stuff? You know, where's the Gospel of Jesus? You see, it's been changed. This isn't the Gospel. This isn't the true Gospel. And so it is definitely a problem. One of the answers you could give is, you know, again, comes back to the several witnesses thing, or just a simple illustration like a table. Would you like to have a table with one leg, or which would be most stable, one leg or four legs? God gave us four testimonies. Actually, if you look at the others, Paul and James and Jude and Peter, he gave us eight witnesses in the New Testament to establish the credibility of the witness concerning his son. And so that's definitely confusion for Muslims. They don't understand that. But again, the big thing is if you can get them reading the New Testament, and if they're seeking, then the word will begin to work.
But do they accept the four Gospels?
No, they do not accept the four Gospels, generally speaking, until it begins to grip their hearts. Then they will. But they're taught from their youth that the four Gospels are corrupted and you can't trust them. The only thing you can trust, according to Islam, is the Quran. They say the Quran has the best of all the truths, and it's all we need to know. Even though the Quran doesn't say that. The Quran doesn't say anywhere that the Bible is corrupted. That is something that Muslims have had to come up with to say, to explain why they're not accepting the message that is contained in the scriptures of the prophets in the Bible. Okay? Role of Islam for the end times. Well, I believe that Islam is going to crumble, and I don't know if that's going to be before the return of Christ. So I would almost guess it will be. I think that this is just my thoughts now. You did say my thoughts, right? And just as we saw communism crumble in a great way, and I think that was incredible. I remember in 1986, we were with some believers. We didn't have any believers through our ministry yet, but we were with some other believers in the country from another part, and we were having a day of prayer on a Sunday, and it was a day specified to pray for Christians in communist countries that are suffering. And, you know, we listened to a tape by Brother Andrew, and in that tape he said, pray for the release of all the Christians that are being held in prison in Russia. Pray that all the Russians will get a Bible in their hands and be able to read the scriptures for themselves. And, you know, we prayed that, but I can't say it was believing prayer. I thought, this is incredible. I mean, what kind of a request is this? There's no way, you know? I mean, I'm afraid that's what I was thinking. But you know, it happened 4 years later, 3 years later, the fall of communism throughout a major part of the world. And that was what happened. Christians in prison were released, and the scriptures went in these countries. And I believe that God can and very possibly will do the same thing in a lot of these Muslim countries. Right now, the events of 9/11 are really something that God is using. Muslims like to talk about, oh, there have been 34,000 converts of Americans to Islam since that date, they say. Maybe. But you'll always have people that will, you know, go after strange things. But the fact is that a lot of Muslims, like an African-American, are disillusioned with Islam. They feel betrayed and hurt by what's happening. And a lot of people are seeing the true face of Islam. And so I believe that this is going to all work together to bring Islam down. Muslims would say, you know, you're a fool. Just like anybody who says that Jesus Christ is going to come down. Say, you know, their thought is Islam is that which is going to prevail, of course. But I believe very firmly that it's going to come down, obviously, it's going to come down. But even perhaps before the return of Christ, that in a large way it's going to crumble. That could be. If not, we have Psalm 72, which talks about the tribes of the desert from these Islamic regions that are going to come and bow in submission before the Messiah. Is that good enough? Okay. Yes, sir. Yeah, if there's another attack on America, would that diminish Islam in the eyes of Muslims? Well, yes, I think, and maybe not just in the eyes of Muslims, but in the eyes of everybody. I mean, I think it will. The more these kind of things happen by Muslims, the more it's going to be confirmed that a lot of Muslims are denying that the events of 9/11 were even done by Muslims. They say it was all a fabrication. Well, I'm not hearing that much anymore. Because there are a lot of pieces of evidence that are coming out, videotapes, they've tried to deny that and say America did that in Hollywood and so on, you know, of Osama bin Laden and all. But there are just too many things that are coming out where it's obvious that this is originating from Muslims. And, of course, as Christians, we admit that atrocities have been done in the name of Christianity. But the point, as we pointed out, is that in Islam, it lines up with what the Quran teaches, at least in the minds of these militants. In the Bible, it does not line up at all with the teachings of the Lord Jesus, who clearly told us to love and forgive our enemies and do good to them. So I think, yeah, the more events there are like this, it's going to make the Muslim world scramble all the more to try to defend, and that's what they're doing right now. They're trying to defend their faith and saying that it's a religion of peace and not of violence and so on. And yet, if you look at that article I have on the web at answering-islam.org, I have the address, it's right in here in your notes. But I point out 7 reasons why Islam is not a religion of peace. And it's really difficult. I mean, I get emails from Muslims who try to refute it, but they have nothing specific. They have nothing specific to say against those 7 points. And so Islam is in an identity crisis. You know, some people ask, what is true Islam? Is it violent or is it peaceful? Well, there's no true Islam in that sense. It depends on who's interpreting the Quran and what they're going to do with it. And so for the militant Muslim, true Islam is fighting in the name of Allah and furthering Islam with the use of violence. And for moderate Muslims, true Islam is being peaceful and doing your 5 daily prayers and being nice to your neighbor. Yes, Mr. Sam? Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, good question. How can we balance the obvious element of we're loyal to our country, we despise what is happening in the name of Islam, the act of terrorist attack on our country, what the Taliban has done in the name of Islam, Al-Qaeda network and all this, and yet as Christians, we're not here to be just cutting down Islam, and our desire is that we'll come to a knowledge of the truth. And that's what you're saying, right? You know, how can we balance that as Christians? And I think, obviously, our government needs to do all it can to root out terrorism around the world, doing the right thing and doing what they can. Romans 13 teaches us that they're given, the government authorities are given as a force against evil and to carry out judgment on those that do evil. Well, we could look to ourselves in that and say, well, we're evil too. You know, look at the immorality and the abortions and just the evil that's coming out of our country. And we'd have to say, well, we're also guilty and we also deserve judgment. And so we need to keep that in balance. And I think we need to keep that attitude. And if we're talking with Muslims, certainly we can point that out and say, look, if we're pointing a finger at Islam, we've got the 3 back at ourselves. We have a beam in our own eyes, too, as a nation. Also, I would point out sometimes that I've pointed this out in emails to Muslims who write that there's no such thing as a Christian nation, according to Scripture. Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight. But that's not the way it is. So you've got a nation that was founded on a lot of Christian principles, but it's not really a Christian nation. And so it's, of course, not fair to judge the Scriptures according to what our nation's doing. the immorality that we're exporting is totally against the scriptures and so on. So you point some of these things out. But as Christians, I believe we really need to keep the perspective of that above all, we want to love Muslims, we want to affirm them. To affirm Muslims doesn't mean that we're affirming Islam. That's why we need to distinguish between the religion and the followers of that religion. And let them know, I remember telling some Muslims I met after 9/11 that, you know, I just want you to know we're praying for you, for your protection, and that, you know, there were some incidences around the country, you know, so they were totally against that. And so you affirm them in that way and let them know that there's a really genuine care for them as people. But at the same time, I'm one that I don't soft pedal too much on Islam. People know that I'm not the best on friendship evangelism. Maybe if some people are that can have a relationship with a Muslim for, you know, 10 years before they really get down to the nitty-gritty of the contrast between the Bible and the Quran. I tend to get down to it pretty quickly. And if people can have if Muslims can have a friendship with me, knowing where I stand, then I'll have a friendship, you know. And it could be a genuine friendship where you really care for them, but they're going to know where you stand. And so I'm pretty clear that, though I wouldn't state it this way originally with Muslims, but I definitely totally disagree on the basis of the writings of the prophets. I cannot agree with what Islam teaches, and here's why. But I really do appreciate you as a friend, and keep that balance. Distinguish between Islam and Muslims. It helps. But it's not easy. We've put the flags on our cars, and we don't want even Muslims that would see us with that flag on it to think that, you know, it's a stance against them. Not at all. We love our country, but we love our God more, and that means we love souls more. And we love a government. I didn't set my timer, so we're just going to have to wing it here. But we can stop whenever you all have had enough. Any other questions? Okay.
Paul, would you cover one more time how you answer the question from the Muslims about saying that the scriptures have been corrupted?
Okay. Sure. There are a lot of ways you can approach the question when Muslims say that the Bible has been corrupted, it's been changed, it's not worthy of confidence. And what I pointed out, maybe you just want me to go back over basically what I said, was that one approach is to ask them, well, and you can ask them a lot of questions, well, who corrupted it? They might say the Jews and the Christians. So why did they corrupt it? I mean, why would the Jews and the Christians corrupt their beloved book? You know, I mean, this is the Torah, the Old Testament, loved by the Jews, and the whole Bible, loved by Christians. Why would they want to corrupt it? And Muslims don't usually have a very good answer for that question. Where was it corrupted? Where did this take place? Well, they don't know. You know, they have no answers for those questions. But then a big question was when. Could you tell me when it was? When do you believe it was corrupted if the Bible was changed? Because obviously, the Quran says that these books were from God and these prophets wrote them. They were divine revelation. At what point did they get lost and corrupted? Was it? And then the question comes down to this issue. Was it before the time of Muhammad or after the time of Muhammad? So that was the big question, you know. And if they say, well, it was before Muhammad, then you would say, well, why does the Quran say that the Quran was given to affirm these books? Why does the Quran say that these books are from God, that they're given for light and guidance? Why does the Quran say that anyone who doesn't accept the writings of the Quran and the previous scriptures will be dragged in hell with chains around their neck? Why does the Quran say these things? If they were corrupt at the time, Muhammad said that you must believe them. And to that, I mean, they'll have some, you know, they have some little answers they put out, but they're not very good ones, you know, well, that... you know, he didn't really mean to believe the actual scriptures and so on. But there's verses in the Quran that say, well, bring the Torah to us if you don't believe what we've said, Muhammad says. You know, bring the Torah. Well, doesn't that sort of give you the feeling that Muhammad considered these scriptures to be intact in his time, if he could bring it, you know? So these are some arguments that they really can't get around to easily. And for those that haven't really faced it, they're baffled often when you bring, they don't really have answers to that. Now, if they were to say, well, it must have been since Muhammad. You know, it was after the time of Muhammad. It's been corrupted since. So, in other words, since, you know, the 7th century. Well, you can tell them, no, our Bible is based on manuscripts that goes back to the times well before the 7th century. This Bible we have today is translated off manuscripts. You go to the Old Testament, And you have in Alexandria, they found 250 BC. I mean, they dated clearly back to that date. Old Testament manuscripts, 250 BC. New Testament manuscripts, they have the first and second century scraps, portions of books. And they have complete New Testament manuscripts to the 4th century B.C. So there you have it. Our Bible is based on manuscripts that at the very most recent would be 4th century B.C. or A.D., excuse me. And meanwhile, Muhammad came along 3 centuries later. So the Bible we have today is the same Bible that existed in the time of Muhammad. It's worked out the same manuscripts. So that was the argument there. But then another argument was, and this is more basic, less complicated. God is great. Is He not great enough to preserve His own eternal Word? Why would He allow it to be corrupted? Why wouldn't God want us to be able to compare these books when all these prophets have spoken and written? And you know, a lot of times Muslims, at least in Senegal, will say, you know, you're right. Uh-huh. You're right. That's right. You know, I mean, God, it seems like He would preserve His Word. So, hold on. That's a big one. I'll give you a 30-second interval to not ask a question, and then, or 15. Got any more? If not, the man of the hour is coming to the front here. And remember the books on the back. If you have any, you know some Muslims at work, at school, think about this book for them. Maybe even get the Arabic version. I only brought 2 of these, but do they speak Arabic? Great tools for reaching Muslims with the gospel. And let's keep praying for the Lord's people working in Muslim context and looking to the Lord to do a great work in this big section, cross-section of humanity. Thank you. Thank you.